go ahead.
Yeah, roger, roger. I think you said WA2CBL. I didn't quite catch it. My call over here on Echo Link is Kilo Delta 2, Delta November Zulu, KD2GNZ. I'm in New Jersey. First name here is Cat. Just scoping around a little bit here before 8 o'clock traffic goes in. One of your regulars, CBV Todd in Lower East Village, told me about this repeater, and I'm just jumping in and hello to everybody. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, okay, Cat, very good. Your name is Andy, Able Nancy Delta Yankee, and I'm in West Hempstead, Long Island. What part of Jersey are you in right now?
I'm up in the Morris-Sussex region, 5 minutes away from Lake Impacon. I don't know if you know where that is, but if I continue on Route 80, it'll only take me about half an hour or 40 minutes to get out to the Pocono Mountains, to the casino in Pennsylvania. I'm like way up in the northwest corner where Route 80 goes right through the George Washington Bridge to California, right here on Route 80 by the Picatinny Arsenal, about 5 miles west of the Rockaway Mall on Route 80. There's, you ever been out this way?
I went to the Sussex Ham Fair a few times. I've been there, and I work in Jersey. I work in Murray Hill, over at Bell Labs. I guess you know where that is. In fact, I was just there Friday. So I'm there quite often, in fact. But that's the only place I go, basically, when I'm in Jersey. Just go there. Just go to work. You know, when I work in Jersey, I don't work in Jersey every day. Because I have another office in Manhattan, in the city. That's a second office. So, I know that area. Go ahead.
Hey, roger that. Murray Hill, set up right now. Yeah, it's my new Providence. Okay, that's like my Bernardsville. Yeah, it's south of me. Down by 287. If you know where Morristown is, because I can see Route 24 or Summit. Morristown, it would be about 20 minutes north of you, and I'm like about another 20 minutes west, Route 80. I mean, you know where Parsippany is? You know, that's way north of, I'm not sure. I think Murray Hill is down by New Providence. Correct on that? I'm not really sure where it is.
Yeah, Jersey's a little bit confusing. For sure. Because it's so large. It's not like Long Island where you just go, you know, from one end to the other. And you're gonna hit water on all sides. And I take the train, so because I don't drive in New Jersey, I don't know the roads. I don't have to know the roads because the train just takes me where I need to go. But yeah, New Providence is one town away. Actually, I usually take the train to Summit, and then I take the bus from there. You know, from Murray Hill to from Summit is not that far away. I do it that way. There's a local repeater, in the area that I work in. Actually, it's at dial. Just want to say a quick hello, and I guess you're on Echo Link, and I haven't used Echo Link in a while. I've been on it when it was actually before it became Echo Link. It was called iLink, but I haven't used it.
I guess I could. I just haven't. So I guess your name is Ken. I'll give it back to you, and I'll let you go. I hear somebody up there trying to key up on RF, but they're not making the mission. All right, Andy, let me hang out here for a minute and see if that other, I think it's a mobile out there. Not sure. Let me hang tight for a minute here. I'm not doing anything for 20 minutes. Let's hope that mobile can get in here.
KV2MAR.
You heard a call out there, KA2MYR, I think it was. Go ahead, pick it up.
Sorry to interrupt there. I would want to call for someone, KC2MY, KC2MMY, KV2MAR.
Roger, roger there, KC2MMY, over to Yonkers, over.
QSL, KP2MAR is clear.
KP2MY, QS1.
Alright, I'll, say 73. Good luck on making contact. Yo, talk to you again.
Yo. Now Jones Beach and everything with the boat and the...
I'll be on that radio check. I just put. I'll be on the. Very much. I'll be on the side listening for the net. Always yellow to Romeo Papa.
I'm on the echoing system. And Q5, you got a 9x9 in there. Full quiet and perfect audio. Going really good all the way. Well, almost out to Pennsylvania. Even though it's in Pennsylvania, I could be a little more interesting. Doing a good job on the repeater. 73 GNC in northwest New Jersey. Gonna go QSY doing that call for the kind of everything going on with the traffic.
Roger, roger,
Andy.
The books don't make it as clear as they should, And so a person who becomes a radio man or wireless man usually does it with quite a few years of apprenticeship experience, exposure to other hams. The good news is the hams are very good at helping each other. Occasionally, unfortunately, they start some rumors and what some people call old wives' tales, things that sound logical and become believed by a whole lot of people. The subject of standing wave ratio has a whole lot of crazy beliefs. You'd be amazed how many professional people, as well as ham radio operators, believe that you only get full performance out of your antenna if the transmission line is an even number of half wavelengths of length, and that a bird watt meter will not read accurately unless the transmission line is an exact number of half wavelengths. Absolutely not true. Lots and lots of people believe that. People believe also they can change the standing wave ratio of their antenna by simply changing the length of the transmission line. In most cases, that's not true. There's a couple of cases where another funny, peculiar characteristic is taking place. Alrighty, a person signs into the TechNet because he does have a question or a comment by giving us his name, call letters, and the word yes. Yes means you do have a question or comment for the net. You need not sign in just because you're listening. This is TechNet number 1547 of the series of TechNets that began in September of 1982, 32 years ago. By now, we sort of believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven to us anymore. Let me drop. And periodically, we're going to drop for not only the four beeps, but a little bit longer than that to make sure that a person who wants to sign in by Echolink has a chance to do so. The good news is that John, KC2WGB, is also monitoring the Echolink website. So if there are people there having trouble signing in, he lets us know about it pretty fast. A typical sign-in would sound like this. VE3JIW, Jim, and yes. Jim has, from Canada, signed in quite a few times. So if you have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
KC2MDP, Steve, and yes.
WB2JOB, Bob, and yes.
WHY, Joe, yes.
Okay. Enter it. After ball, harmonics.
Okay, so we've got Steve, Bob, Joe, and Wesley in that order. Anyone else to check in? Because you do have a question or comment for the net. And those guys did it right. Call letters and name just right, and the word yes. Give me your call letters, name, and the word yes if you do have a question or a comment. You can do so right now.
D2WGB, quick note.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, I'd just like to put out the email for forwarding the questions to the TechNet at my email address, julianbaker5oscar@aol.com. Just anybody who's interested. If I get that in email, I will post that question. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
Out of curiosity, John, is that email address present on your QRZ.com location? In other words, if somebody goes to QRZ.com and types in KC2WGB, would he be able to, from that little website, find out your email address? Over to you, John.
That is correct, Dick. Yeah, affirmative. It's there. It's been posted. And I just wanted to announce it because we had some requests on that. So I just wanted to fulfill that. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
Yes, we did get one this week, which I passed on to you. And so the smarter people will list their email address on their QRZ.com website. And sometimes they give other pieces of information, like what they do, how they got here. In the case of KC2WGB on QRZ.com, not only will you find his email address, but you'll see a very large number of pictures of the test equipment that's present in his two, count them two, laboratories at his QTH in Staten Island. So he's down to his last 50 pieces of test equipment. I'm having a little bit of fun with him, so you get a chance to look at some of those. They range from very elaborate things by Hewlett-Packard, Systron, Donner, and whatever, and all the way down to even the Wimshurst machine, which I took John into getting a hold of, which is an interesting tool at times. One last call. Anyone to sign into the TechNet? Of course, you do have a question or a comment. Give me a call. That is right now. K2RIW listening.
WB2GXM, Rich, and yes.
Yes.
And WS2N, Paul, with this evening's space report.
Which will be space report number 140 of the series. Okay, on that last call-in, we got Rich, WB2GXM, I think it's Golf X-Ray Mike, and there was another person under there, who was the other person? Give me your call letters. I got Paul. Who was the other person? Okay, I know it's Mike, but there was a dropout. K something, Mike. Give me your full call letters again, Mike.
K-E-2-C-Y-M.
Okay, you are 80% noise, 20% audio. I heard Kilo Bravo 2, Charlie Yankee Mike. Do I have it correct, Mike?
Kilo Delta 2, Charlie Yankee Mike.
Okay, Kilo Delta 2, Charlie Yankee Mike. Alrighty, more than enough to get started. Steve, we'll discuss anything except antennas. I'm pulling Steve's leg. KC2MDP, K2RIW. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay.
Good evening, Dick. Good evening, everyone else on the net. Just basically a follow-up to last week's problem I was having with the Baofeng programming. I ended up narrowing it down. I think it was either the cable or the driver. What I ended up doing was getting a new cable, and it's an FTDI cable. Now, this cable is a little different than the one they originally gave me, being that it works with Windows 7 and Windows 8 drivers. You don't have to install a different driver for this thing. And I plugged this in. It recognized USB, recognized the cable, and I used the Chirp software, and I'm up and running. Back to you.
Dick, please put K2MU on your list.
Yeah, I think I heard him sign in by EchoLink, Kilo 2 Mike Uniform. And out of curiosity, what's his name, John?
No name listed, Dick.
We'll get that later. Okay, K2MU's on the list. Yeah, the Baofengs are very tempting because they give you a lot of radio for the money. I mean, handy talkies in the very beginning of the dark ages started off at numbers like $2,000. Nowadays, for $39 with shipping, you can get a radio that's a dual band. You could also call it triple band. It covers 2 meters, 450, and the FM broadcast band, and quite a few other things, and some of the commercial bands at around 470. So lots and lots of stuff. However, the later versions occasionally have modulation is too narrow. I own one of those, and I did one of the modifications of increasing the size of the hole in front of the microphone, and didn't get anywhere near as much improvement as I was hoping to. In the case of Steve, he was having trouble programming it. There were a number of people claiming in the past that if you buy the interfacing cable by which you can use the computer program, what's the name of that program, Steve? I keep forgetting it.
It's Chirp Software, Dick, C-H-I-R-P.
That's the word I keep forgetting, the Chirp. So with certain cables and the Chirp software, occasionally there was incompatibility. Some people thought some of the cables had the wrong chip. It did or didn't work on certain model numbers. So in your particular case, Steve, I think you're saying you did change the cable, and when you got a cable, it's labeled FTDI. Sounds like Foxtrot, Tango, Delta, India. When you got that particular cable, combined with your Chirp, with your Baofeng, it was your Baofeng a UV5R. UV5R. I think it's one of the very popular UV3R, UV5R. You might tell us which one you're using. And with that, I presume, newer cable, now everything's compatible and you can talk to it. And as long as your radio does have the push buttons on the front panel, it is useful to learn to be able to program it from those buttons, because occasionally you're in the field and you're going to add something else to the memory, and you're not in close locale to a computer with that cable. TC2 MDP K2RIW, you got it, Steve.
Okay, very good, Dick. Yes, originally I got this cable at the Ham Fest, and according to the cable, it has a prolific chip in it, and the Windows 7 and Windows 8 drivers don't work, so you basically have to download this driver software, and I tried several different versions. Now, I don't know if it was the driver software that wasn't working or if it was the cable itself that wasn't working. Basically, it would recognize the software, would say that the USB port is working, and I couldn't get this radio to work no matter what I did. I tried different software as far as the Baofeng software. I tried the Chirp software. So I read a little further. I found out about this FTDI cable. I ordered it. It was $19 on Amazon. I got it in 2 days, plugged it in. The computer recognized the cable immediately. And what I did first is I tried the UV5R, because the Chirp software didn't have the my radio listed, which it was the original radio was having a problem with, which is the BF-A5. So I tried the UV5R first. It worked perfectly. And then I tried the A5s, which I was originally having a problem with, and I found that the BF-888 software in Chirp worked perfectly, because the A5 is supposed to be an updated model of the BF-888. Back to you, Dick.
Sounds like you're off and running, Steve. In the case of your UV5R, how long ago did you buy it? Because the people who bought it, let's say, 2.5 years ago were very happy. People who bought it in the last year or so have the more narrowband modulation problem. When you put yours on the air, if you've already done so, do people usually say that you've got the right amount of deviation, your audio is loud enough, or is yours still possibly in the narrowband situation? And the confusion here is that, yes, there is a menu where you can select narrowband and wideband, and with the newer units, significant number of them, in the wideband mode are only 2.5 kc of deviation, and you'd like 5 kc of deviation. So in the wideband mode, the newer ones in many cases are 2.5, in the narrowband mode are 1.25, which is either 6 or 12 dB down in audio output compared to a normal ham radio or rig over an FM repeater. So that can be kind of troublesome. Temporarily, people will put the microphone 1/4 inch away from their mouth and shout into it. That gives them almost enough audio, but still it's low. So do you have reason to believe yours has desirable deviation in audio right now, or is that something else you might still have to work on if you happen to know, Steve? KC2 MDP, K2RIW in the TechNet. And how old is your UV5R?
Okay, Dick, I'd say the UV5R, I know it's the narrow-banded one. I probably bought it maybe, a little more than a year ago. I got it at the Limehawk Ham Fest in June, and that was last June, I think, so it's coming up, maybe not a year, maybe a little more than a year. I've never really messed with it. I've tried a external speaker mic, and it makes it a little bit better, but as far as this radio, I'm not really too concerned, because this UV5R, basically, I have in the work truck. You know, like you said, it's a cheap radio. I think I bought it for $40 at the Ham Fest, and if it gets knocked around, broken, I'm not really too concerned about $40. So as far as the audio, it is a little teeny, it's low, but like I said, you know, I keep it in the work truck. If I'm actually going to go someplace and know I'm going to be on the air and looking for different repeaters, so forth, so on, I'll take, you know, my Yaesu or my Icom or one of the other radios. Back to you, Dick.
It sounds like you feel you're getting your money's worth, and I think you are. And at your leisure, to try to apply one of these repair procedures to give it more deviation, I think is worth a try. There are some people who think there's new software you can load which you can get the greater deviation back. I'm skeptical of that, but I've heard it said. There are some people who have drilled out the hole in front of the microphone. There is a UV5R version UV5RB, I think it is, which is known to be advertised as being waterproof. If you simply eliminate the piece of plastic that makes the microphone waterproof, eliminate the piece of plastic that's in front of the microphone, it comes up to full audio amplitude. Other people use the external speaker mic and get a little bit more audio, and some people have modified the external speaker mic and gotten great improvement. If you go to the websites that tell you what people have done, some of them have made electronic modifications to increase the amount of gain in the audio system after the microphone. So there are ways of doing it, and at your leisure, I recommend you doing it, because not only is it a lot of rig for the money, but if you can actually have the right amount of deviation, there are times when you're in a weak signal area, and let me drop, when you've got a combination of a weak signal that's kind of noisy into the repeater, combined with low deviation, all of a sudden the percentage of copy goes down to 10% instead of a 95%, so to speak. So to get the deviation up, in my opinion, is worth fighting for. I haven't hit the success button on that one yet, and so when any of us do, we'll be passing that word on to each other. Part of what's going on is that the FCC has a new mandate for more narrowband commercial rigs, and that UV5R, although it does a beautiful job of covering the ham radio frequencies, it is a rig intended for commercial purposes. It just happens to cover ham radio frequencies. So in order to sell it to their much bigger market, the commercial market, they're making sure it meets the new narrowband FCC requirements. That's part of what I think is going on. Good luck with it, Steve, and come back and tell us how that project proceeds. WB2JOB, Bob, go right ahead with your question. K2RIW in the TechNet, my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. My question is in regards to a problem a friend of mine is having. Let me give you a rundown quick on his equipment. It's all the problem with his amplifier. He's got the Yaesu FTDX1200. He's running an Amatron AL811H 800-watt amplifier. He's using an MFJ989D antenna tuner. He's running that into a G5RB mini antenna. He has a power supply, which is the SEC1235M. What happened was the first time he went on with the amplifier, he has Fios, which is his cable system. It took the sound completely out of the TV, in addition to putting out a tremendous howl the minute he went to transmit. Now, we only ran it up to about 400 watts at that time. At 100 watts, when the amplifier is not in the line, he has no problem at all. Well, what we did was I picked up some 2.5-inch toroids and I used an RG8 cable. And I wrapped all his cables with the toroids, 2.5, 3 turns, wherever I could get into the RG8, on all the cables, from the antenna, the power supply, cables going into the antenna, tuner, the whole thing. Did absolutely nothing. Let me let it drop in. The next step I did was I took aluminum foil and put it around the box for his BIOS. Well, sure enough, it corrected the problem. We were able to get on. He was able to run 300 or 400 watts without any problem at all. Well, about a month into it, the TV he had, which was a 54-inch Insignia TV, went bad on him. So he went out and he bought a 54-inch Samsung TV. Now, he turned it on the first time, he had no problem. The next time he went on, which is about 2 or 3 days later, the problem reappeared again. So now he's in a position where, of course, his wife is not going to allow him to run the amplifier when it takes the TV sound completely out. So at this point, I'm not quite sure what we have left to do, Dick. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you get a great big howl feedback, quite often it's an audio amplifier somewhere in the environment picking up the RF energy and rectifying it, putting it to the loudspeaker. Therefore, you're getting sound into the loudspeaker, make sound out of the audio system, out of the Fios or the television set, or quite often people run into the problem with the speakers that they use for their computer to make sound come out of their computer. Many of those audio amplifiers, particularly on the TV set, and on the sound system for a computer. The audio amplifier in there is continuously powered, even when you turn the television set off. The audio portion is powered. Part of that's because the set has a fraction of its power supply running, so that the remote control circuitry that's supposed to pick up the infrared or RF signal from your remote control can pick it up and do its ordering. Second of all, the audio is continuously powered so that when you turn the set on, it isn't suddenly getting power to the audio, which would make a pop sound come out of the loudspeaker. So the audio is continuously running. Let me drop. Because the audio is continuously running, even if the television set is turned off, even if the computer is turned off, and you've got the speakers for the computer sitting there, yes, quite often they have a push button, you can turn them off, but when they are turned on, all of the wiring to the audio system in many a piece of electronics, particularly those speakers for a computer, that's completely unshielded wiring, and that wiring going into the speakers is a beautiful antenna. Picks up the RF energy coming from your antenna on top of the roof, 50 feet away, so to speak, but it's still close enough to pick up enough of that RF. It goes into that first stage of audio amplification, gets rectified by that first emitter base junction, and after you get audio pouring out of the system, and you got a feedback howl. Doing whatever is required to stop that wiring, into the case of the loudspeakers for a computer, to stop that wiring from becoming an antenna. Some people have wrapped that wire around a toroid. Some people have put an extra 100 or 1,000 picofarad bypass capacitor right on the PC board at the audio input wiring. There's various ways of stopping it from becoming an antenna. The manufacturer of those loudspeakers for a computer, and in some cases the audio system for a television set, the manufacturer there is trying to minimize the cost. They usually do very little RF bypassing because they assume that 99% of their customers are not going to be living next door to a ham radio operator. Let me drop. And once you find out which piece of wire, and it's usually the audio input wire and or power supply wiring, lots of things entering the box can be an antenna. The box for the audio system quite often is a plastic box which has very little shielding. But there's various ways of choking the RF with a ferrite by wrapping the wiring into it and or bypassing with capacitors. All situations like this of electromagnetic interference are eliminatable. I didn't say they're easy, but they all can be fixed. And because when that audio system of the TV set or the speakers for a computer are working correctly, they shouldn't be picking up RF. And you might have to add a dollar's worth of bypass capacitors or ferrite chokes to make the problem go away. But with diligence, you can make the problem go away, as I see it. Bob, don't give up. The brute force approach is to put tinfoil around the whole damn thing. That's, as I said, a little bit brute force. A more sophisticated approach is to find out in what method of ingress is the signal getting into the system, and usually it can be bypassed. In other words, almost stopped at the source, so to speak, right at the PC board, where that wire that's now an antenna, you can stop it by being an antenna by putting a 1,000 picofarad ceramic disc bypass capacitor with short leads. Various people have done things like that, and as long as they stick to the problem, they almost always get success. And even if you don't get success, there are various people, let me drop. There are various people in this particular club, Limelock, Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club, who have run into problems like this, and they've got a fantastically good track record. You get a hold of the right guy. If after you've done your homework and you've done as much as you can, you get a hold of the right guy, and with 90-some-odd% probability, he can make the problem go away for you. Just a matter of applying the right shielding technique, bypassing technique, with the right amount of smarts and experience. So don't give it up, Bob. WB2JOB, you're going to be able to run the full power of the amplifier when you want to. K2RIW in the Texan.
Okay, Dick, yeah, what was confusing was the fact that, well, first off, this is my friend's has the problem. I also had the FTDX 1200. And I also have the same antenna tuner, and I'm running it into a G5RV, but I'm also running it into a Gap DX. And the amplifier I have is the Heat SB200, and I have no problem at all, but I'm using the DirecTV, and he has the Fios. Now, what confused us was after I put the foil around his Fios box, the problem went away. And it was away for quite a while until the TV he had, which, as I mentioned, was an Insignia, went bad. And then he bought the Samsung, the 54-inch Samsung. And the first time he powered up the amplifier, it was fine. The second time he powered it up is when the problem came back again with the howling. So it was confusing as to why it was there 1 minute, and now it's back again, and then it went away, and now it's back again. So that was confusing on there. And I did the toroids. I wrapped everything there, 2.5 turns of the cables. So now I'm going to have to take a look, Dick, and see if I put some sort of filtering in there to the line going in. Go ahead.
QQQ to comment. Glenn recognized. We're going to get to Glenn in a minute. Some of the shielding characteristics that you've added, you've been doing shielding of the coax cables of the transmitter. And I think there's a 95% probability the transmitter is innocent. The particular model number of transmitter, the particular model number of the power supply, the particular model of the antenna tuner, and the particular model number of the antenna is not a factor. You're radiating 400 or 800 watts from that antenna. An antenna is radiating that signal in all directions like it's supposed to. The antenna is within a block or so of that neighbor's set, and it's got susceptible wiring. And the fact that the set was changed from brand A to Sony, and is getting into the audio system of the TV set and giving you a feedback howl, each TV set has different layout of its wiring and different layout of its non-existent bypass capacitors and so on. So the susceptible component is the TV set, the Fios. The ham radio equipment, in my opinion, is thoroughly innocent. Let me drop. It's very easy to blame the ham radio equipment. Yes, the problem becomes more aggravated when you go from the 100 watts output of a barefoot transmitter to 400 or 800 watts output from an afterburner amplifier. Now the signal to the antenna is stronger, and therefore the susceptibility of the neighbor's TV set or their computer system becomes more obvious. But the thing that's doing the howling is the thing that has the poor shielding. And that's the thing that needs the bypassing, shielding, choking, and so on. So don't blame the ham radio equipment. As long as the connectors on the coax cables are not frayed and they're making good contact and they're properly tightened down, the radiation is coming from the G5RV antenna as it's supposed to. And so that's where I think it's coming from. Let's see what Glenn's got to say about this, because I bet you he has solved some similar problems. KC2QIQ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, good evening, Dick, and everybody on the net tonight. It's an interesting thing that solving EMI problems today has gotten a lot easier, mainly because the manufacturers now are mainly following European rules and meeting what they call CE requirements, where basically they become truly EMI compliant from both radiated noise coming from the TV set and from stray pickup from susceptibility. And what's interesting here is a lot of times just by looking on the back of the equipment, if you look to the CE mark, it's a very, very good indicator whether your TV is going to be able to have transmitters and amplifiers in the house and not have any problems. And this goes for everything from scanners to modems, just about anything that you have in your house that is wireless. If you look on the back and just look for that CE mark, in most cases you'll be okay. Interesting note about Verizon, let me let it drop. Verizon has been through many, many revisions of their boxes over the last few years, and some of the earlier boxes, especially when they came out with the HDTV on their boxes with Fios, they had originally these Motorola silver boxes that had a clock on the front. These are notorious for all kinds of problems, having to unplug them and plug them back in. They really weren't CE compliant. But if you have one of the new boxes today, the Motorola ones that are black-faced without the clock, 90% of the problem that goes away. away with the box. So a couple of interesting things to look for there is one, that if you do have Fios, make sure you have the black box, not the one with the clock. And two is look at your TV sets and make sure that they always have that CE mark. If it doesn't have a CE mark, don't buy it. Case 2, QIQ.
6DPZ. B2HUC with a comment.
HAL and HUC in that order recognized. Buying CE gives you a lot more protection. However, these guys already own the TV set. For all we know, it's a $2,000 investment, and they're not going to trade it in just because of this. So they're going to be finding ways of doing bypassing and shielding and choking, in my opinion. HAL, I bet you've run into quite a few of these, and let's see how you quite often solve it. K6DPZ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
W and TechNet, K6DPZ. Nick, to be honest with you, I just turned on the TechNet. I was tied up. What is the question? And I'll try and give you the quickie answer. How's that?
Okay, this is Bob, WP2JOB, who brought this to our attention. He listed the actual ham radio equipment, which I think is irrelevant. He's got an afterburner amplifier that brings it up to 400 and 800 watts. At the 100 watt level, or 400 watt level, he has almost no problem. As they start approaching 800 watts, they get a howl and a feedback of a Fios box powering a Sony 54-inch TV set to get feedback. He did put some tin foil on a Fios box and saw some improvement at one time. And by the way, the Sony TV set is the second set. And so there's a little bit of confusion there about set A and set B. But the pickup of the set audio system is giving a feedback that creates a howl and obviously a sideband signal from the G5RV antenna. G5RV antenna is relatively close to the susceptible piece of equipment, and we're trying to convince Bob that he's probably going to have to do choking and or bypassing. Because in the case of the wiring that goes into loudspeakers for a computer, for instance, that's a beautiful antenna that will pick up the RF. Quite often the audio system in a TV set does a very good job of picking up the RF. And the confusion for some people is that even when the television set is turned off, the audio system usually is live. Therefore, it's still capable of picking up RF, rectifying it, and then it comes roaring out of the loudspeaker as you go to the higher powers. So I'm pretty sure that Bob is now down to shielding, bypassing, and choking all of the appropriate audio circuitry. And it's the Fios converter box into the Sony TV set that's his current problem. K6DPZ, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it, HAL. Wait for the beep.
Eric, this synopsis, Dick. K2RIW in TechNet, K6DPZ. Okay, let's start off first by saying a G5RV is one of the worst antennas around. You have to use it with a tuner. The thing has all sorts of standing wave radiation from its feed line. So that's number one. Number two, he says running low power, okay, the field is not as bad, but when you're running a good amount of power with that antenna, you got all sorts of radiation problems. There's one way he can get around it, if he has the cost and money to do so, is get a remote antenna tuner. Random wire remote antenna tuner, JRC, not JRC, I'm thinking five things at once. There's a company that makes a high power one. You can get it as far away physically possible from the station. Put it outside in a weather case. That way, everything coming into the station is 50 ohms, and it's not going to radiate. Then you can cure the whole problem, because I've seen this happen with other TVs and solid-state radios. You have to drive the antenna far enough away from the station, have 50 ohm on balance coming into your station, and if it's left standing wave, you won't have radiation. That's my quickie. This is K6DPZ. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay. We got good copy on everything you said, HAL. There is quite a bit of clicking noise because of the voting system or something like that going on with your current location, and a fair amount of noise in the background. Thought I'd bring that to your attention. Now, HAL and I differ a little bit on this one. HAL is taking the direct approach of taking the antenna, the G5RV, which, yes, it is an antenna that's a little bit worse on this problem. because depending on which model you've got, that twin lead that goes into it, which is part of the impedance matching that gives them broadband, multiband operation, does do some extra radiating, and if that twin lead comes by a susceptible TV set, it is more aggravated. He is using an antenna tuner, but to ask for him to move the antenna 50 or 100 feet further away from the susceptible set is, in my opinion, a brute force approach. From my point of view, Hal, every susceptible piece of electronics that's picking up RF and rectifying it and sending it out the audio system, it is correctable right at that location. In other words, the wiring into that audio system, particularly if it's external loudspeakers for a computer, for instance, that wiring is almost never shielded wiring. It's a beautiful antenna picking up a hell of a lot of that signal and shoving it into the audio system. And by choking that wiring and or bypassing it with 1,000 or 100 picofarad disc ceramic bypass capacitors, you can make huge improvements. I will admit that getting into the audio system inside of a television set to do that bypass, I will admit that that's a lot more difficult. And people get confused by the fact that a television set turned off still picks up the audio because the audio stays live. So, and sometimes just changing the orientation of the TV set, just moving the box, the Fios box, moving it from point A to point B and rotating it a little bit and whatever, there are times that that makes improvement. That's a long shot. But to stop the audio system from picking up the RF is really the direct approach. To ask the ham to move his antenna 50 feet away and or putting a ballon right at the antenna, these are fairly drastic approaches. Yes, they will work, but Hal and I differ a little bit here as to the easiest approach. There's at least two approaches. There's an infinite number of approaches, and quite possibly Steve is going to give us another approach. KD2HUC, who has a comment on this. K2RIW, you got it, Steve.
Hey, Dick, I'm just kind of curious what type of connection he's utilizing from the Fios box to the television. The stock connection that comes with the box is just a relatively cheap RGB with the two audio channels. The shielding on it is horrible. It's, you know, like a $10 Radio Shack item. I did have a similar problem, not from my handset, but from some other interference that was very easily cured by upgrading to a relatively high quality HDMI connection, which I believe is more heavily shielded, and the problem went away. So the issue may be between the cable box and the television, and not even the television or the cable box itself. I was just curious what the condition of that connection was. Back to you, Dick. KD2HUC.
GP's got another comment. Yes, stand by, Hal. Steve, you brought up a very good point. The inexpensive RCA phono jack plug type wiring, which sometimes has got a very broad braid to it, which has quite a bit of leakage, that could be a contributing factor. And if the person is willing to buy the HDMI cable, most boxes like the Fios box do have an HDMI output. Almost all modern TV sets have an HDMI input. And with the a reasonably good quality HDMI cable, some extra bucks to be spent might be definitely worth it. Before we go over to Hal, let me go back to Bob and find out, does he know what kind of a cable exists between the Fios box and the Sony TV set? WB2JOB, K2RIW, the TechNet. You've got it for that question, Bob.
I have another question for you to ask him, Dick.
John's also in the queue after Hal. Bob, you got it?
K2RIW, WB2JOB. Well, first off, Dick, let me say I agree with you 100% that it has nothing to do with the ham equipment, the amateur radio equipment. I run a kilowatt here using the same antenna, the G5RV, and also into my GAP-DS antenna, and I have no problem at all, but I don't have Fios. I have DirecTV, and my antenna for my DirecTV is very close to where the Now I'm coming down from my G5RV is, and I have absolutely no interference whatsoever. My friend is the one that's having the interference over there. So I agree with you 100%. It has to do with the TV. Now, as far as the cable going into his TV, I can't answer that. I really don't know. I only went up to his BIOS box, which, by the way, happens to be the old version. So that might be a cure for his problem. He has the older box. He's had it for quite a while. So maybe he needs to get a hold of BIOS and have them come in and put in a new box. So at that point, that's about all the information I had, Dick. One other thing before I give it back to you. Let me let it drop. In regards to the both-end radios, the UV5s and the rest of those, I've taken apart a few of them just to see what make them tick. And every one I've found, either in the hand mics or on the front panel, the hole where the where you're supposed to speak into is not even close to where the speaker is. In fact, the one on the mic had to be at least a good quarter of an inch away from it. In fact, I've drilled holes in a couple of the hand mics, a few of them for friends, and it improved the audio quite a bit. But in any case, that's another subject. Anyway, back to you, Dick. K2RIW, WB2JOB.
Okay, looks to me like you're well on the way there doing the detector work on this one, Bob. So yes, it's the older Fios box, which is an aggravating factor, but even the older Fios box probably has an HDMI output connector as well as the RCA phono jacks for red, green, blue, and audio. And so if he switches over to the more expensive cable, which will give him higher fidelity pictures, and tell him that it's a good investment to buy that HDMI cable, and it's usually a better shielded cable to put that between the box and or maybe the newer Fios box. And I know that all modern day TV sets have an HDMI connector, and if he starts using it, he could become a lot happier in a hurry. Hal wants to add something to this, and so does John. K6DBZ, K2RIW, go ahead, Hal.
K2RIW. Take that, K60. See, my philosophy is, Dick, when you start bypassing equipment, you're putting a Band-Aid on the equipment so the RF won't get into it. My philosophy is get the RF away from the equipment to begin with. Don't have to worry about bypassing the equipment, and it will work. And especially when you're running higher power levels. You know, 200-watt PET, 100-watt RMS is going to be a big problem on a G5RV. But when you start really pumping power, you got a lot of near-field radiation. And you have a lot of this newer stuff, all this audio stuff, and the Fios and everything. They were not designed that well for RFI shielding. So, you know, you're playing Russian roulette. And my way, I mentioned what to do, is a totally sanitary way, because nothing is coming into the station. There's no radiation. It goes off 50 ohms. You have a remote auto antenna tuner. And you go on the air and it works great. I've seen this done with the G5RV, where somebody had some real problems. I suggested they do it that way with high power, high power tuner. Cleared up all the problems there. Gone. Pick it up then, K60%.
There's a very large number of ways of solving this problem. And Bob's slowly going to go down that list. The HDMI cable is the thing I would try first. Whether or not he can climb inside the set and do the bypassing, I'll admit that's difficult. In the case of bypassing these very simple circuits that are external speakers for a computer, there it's very easy. I recommend to have a piece of susceptible equipment in the house which can't tolerate RF at all, and a simple bypass capacitor, and or a ferrite choke can make it go bleep. To me, that's such a simple solution, it's worth a try. But each person has his own favorite way of doing things. John, what's the next question you think we should be asking? KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2WGB. Quick question, Dick, is entrance point. Eliminate the box, leave the wires on the TV, see if it still happens. If it still happens, disconnect the wires from the TV. See if it goes directly into the TV or if it's emanated from the box. That would be a good point to investigate, I believe. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
for you. I like that one. Divide and conquer. By disconnecting wires one at a time, particularly the audio wire between the Fios and the set, and or the red, green, and blue, and so on, by disconnecting various wires and finding out when the problem comes and goes, will give you another very strong clue. And in some cases, people have gotten improvement by taking the Fios box with an extension cord and plugging it into a different outlet in the house. Sometimes the 110-volt wiring represents a kind of an antenna. And by plugging the TV set and or the Fios box into a different outlet by way of an extension cord, simple as that sounds, it's a different kind of wiring, so to speak, a different antenna, where the 110-volt wiring in your house can, in many cases, particularly with Romex wiring, which is very popular these days. Back in the days of BX wiring, a metal and sheathed wiring, you had nowhere near as much problem as some of the modern-day plastic-encased wiring. So all that 110-volt wiring in your house is one hell of a beautiful antenna picking up all of those signals. So as you follow through with these various steps, Bob, with your neighbor, and take your time. There's no big hurry on this one, if you know what I mean. It's a step-by-step scientific process you're going through. The problem is going to go away. You're just about to find out how many steps are required to make it go away in this particular case. So I'd like you to come back and tell us your progress, whether it be good or bad. You tried this and it didn't work. You tried that and it did work. We'd like to hear about that. That'd be B2, J-O-B, K2RIW, and TechNet. You got a good problem there, Bob.
I have one more comment. I didn't realize it was his neighbor having problems, not him. Is that a solid-state amplifier?
It's a Sony TV set, and first of all, his afterburner amplifier, I think it's an Amatron, when he runs it at 400 watts, he sometimes gets the problem. When he gets to that, runs it at 800 watts, it's a kilowatt amplifier, the problem really comes roaring through as I see it. So back to you, Bob. WB2JOB, with your final. Please come back in future weeks and let us know how it goes. You've got it, Bob. K2RIW.
Have one more minute. I have a comment.
Go ahead, Hal.
The fire is very dirty. When he runs higher power, the chances are that's why it's got so much RF field getting into the Sony. You may get away by putting a low-pass filter on that amplifier and cleaning it up.
That's worth a try. I think it's just pure RF overload of a susceptible television set system, whether it be the wiring between the Fios box and the set, whether it be the Fios itself, whether it be the audio system within the TV set. It's a combination. Electromagnetic interference, there's 50 ways the signal can get in there. And step by step, Bob is about to find out how to make it go away. So please come back and let us know. Back to you for a final, Bob. WB2JOB, K2RIW, the TechNet.
K2RIW, WB2JOB. Well, gentlemen, you certainly give me a number of things to look into. The CE, the wiring, the electrical wiring. We certainly got a number of things to check into. Whether he's got an HDMI cable, I don't really know, to be honest with you. I have it on mine. My TVs, all of mine have that on, and as I say, I run a kilowatt. And by the way, the amplifier is an Amatron AL811H, which is, I don't have that one. I have a Heat SP200, but he has that one there. And he actually gets it about 300 watts or so, and it starts to go crazy on him. In any case, gentlemen, I really appreciate all the information. It's been very helpful. You've given me a number of things for me to bring over to him, and I will certainly get back to you, Dick, and give you an update as soon as we have some progress one way or the other. So thanks again to everybody for all their very helpful information, and looking forward to talking to you again. So K2RIW, WB2JOB, thanks a lot.
EC2QIQ with a comment, Dick.
I had a question for Hal on a topic he brought up, Dick, when you get a chance.
Okay, we're looking forward to hearing from you in the future, Bob. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, it's one of the comments that he had made was that his friend has the old silver front Fios boxes with the clock in it, and those are notorious. And if he wants to bring it down to Fios, I think it's right in Hempstead, he can bring the box down there, and they'll exchange it for him. You know, just bring in the box with the remote, and they'll give him a brand new box.